Wait a minute.
I had it going on my other screen.
Oh, well, to everybody else who's focused, welcome back to the Barbecue Nerds Podcast. I'm David, here with my barbecue brother and smoke, Frank. Today, we're going to go all in on pork, ribs, butts, chops, belly, you name it. We're going to talk about the best cuts, how to smoke them right, and bust a few myths along the way. Frank, are you ready to nerd out on some pork?
Man, I've been nerding out for about a half hour. I've been just dumping photos. I know this is on audio also, but, you know, on the YouTube side and the Facebook page side, when the show is live, you can see some of my little overlays that I put in here for tonight. I'm super excited about this. I had a lot of fun today getting prepared. Dave wrote a great text thing for us to, like, be somewhat prepared.
So, you know, when we think about pork, one of the things that came to mind today, because I'm preparing for that trip down there to Texas, it's our own meetup. Let's just call it that. Yes. M-E-A-T up. So yep. What was going through my head is this boneless pork belly that still has a rib meat in there. I was going to take a ride past the local restaurant depot and grab one of these from Leedy's, which just happens to be a farm here in Pennsylvania. Yeah. And I realized, what am I doing in my excitement picking this up today when I'm not coming there for another 2 weeks? I had to pump the brakes on that one because, as you know, I tend to get a little bit carried away, do things over the top, and everything has to be on a massive quantity. So when you're thinking Restaurant Depot, there's no way that I'm walking in and walking out with one rack of ribs. I'm walking out with a case.
Yes, that's correct. That's the right way. Yeah. And you got to use she money so you don't get yelled at when you get home. You know what she money is?
That's half the money that she's going to take from me anyway?
Nope.
Oh, what's that?
No, she money is money she don't know about. Yeah, it's like a she shed, but it's money. But it's a he shed. So it's money she don't know about. It's in the he shed is where you hide it. Well, no, then she would know. It would be an instant assumption that it's in there. And, you know, well, anyway, for more tips about how to hide money from your girl, go watch the Smoker Builder YouTube channel, because there's a decade of that, more than a decade of that on there.
So, Frank, when you think of the best cuts of barbecue, you know, what comes to mind? Would it be the pork shoulder, the pork butt? You know, which one of these would you go with? And what's the real difference between these two?
My goodness, man. You know, I don't know a piece of pork that I don't like a lot, but I got to say, you started off with that whole rib cage kind of scenario there. Can it get any better than like a full side with bones in? Like I'm saying, like pork belly, the ribs, just like the whole deal. Just get that whole thing done.
So you want to, let me understand this right. It sounds like you're coming up with quite the delicious dish. So we're going to take a whole hog, split them right down the middle, right?
Center
right.
Cut.
Bam. Yeah, that's it. Boom. 50-50 symmetricals cut. And then put this onto what? A smoker? Or are we going to go hot and fast? How do you want to cook this pig?
We got to use both cookers. We got to start on the offset and just get like just some good color going. Get some cherry wood smoke and some hickory smoke rolling. Get it colored, you know. And then we got to crisp everything up on the direct heat. We got that pork belly, you know, that's still on there. Direct heat ribs, membrane on. If you never had that, you know, we're gonna cook both sides hot after we get it. We're gonna warm it up on the offset, man. Color. Lots of red. I like pork to be red. You know, it just looks good.
That sounds like a divine swine.
Jeez. And then we got to mop it. We got to mop it with something while we're at it.
Anything. Are we going Carolinas? What are you thinking?
Anything. We could do that. Matter of fact, we could cook three of them or take that one and cut it in three pieces because it is a pretty good chunk of meat.
Sure.
Cut it in three pieces. Let's do one with vinegar and like hot pepper and stuff. Let's do another one with like some mustard sauce, something like that, a mustard mop. Mm-hmm. And then let's do another one over here with just like a good, just a red, like a Tennessee red kind of, if you guys know what Blues Hog is, Tennessee red, like a good vinegar red sauce and just mop it. Oh yeah. Dang, dude. I'm getting excited.
I'm looking forward to this. You know, we're going to have to get ourselves a nice pig. We got to find a butcher that's going to do this, or you're going to find me out in the woods with a 22 looking for a feral hog.
Yeah, we got them everywhere out here. It's no problem. You know, the only thing is, I'm just thinking about skin on. You know, there's a whole group of guys that are just like, you know, leave that skin on, you know, crisp it up, stuff like that. I don't have a lot of experience with that. I've always done it skin off. So I don't really know where to go with that, honestly.
You go skin on. And there's, yeah. And yeah. So, but here's the thing. When we go skin on, keep in mind that in order to crisp that up so that you don't end up with that football pigskin leather, you really got to get that thing hot, because that skin's got to become some crackling. It's got to start popping. It's got to start boiling. Just thinking about those that are listening, you want this to sound like you just poured milk into your bowl of Rice Krispies, where it's crackling, it's popping, crackling. It's boiling up. That's the type of skin, so that when you bite into it, it has the crunch of a potato chip versus that leathery outside, because we didn't get enough heat on it and we didn't dry it out enough. That's one of the things that, you know, when we're cooking skin on, we want to salt that skin to be able to pull the water out of it and get down to that fat layer. And even in that case, we're pulling the water out of that fat as well. So I'm a skin on guy.
Yeah. I don't think there's a wrong way to do it. You know, it's going to be so good when it's all done. I mean, you know, it's just going to be phenomenal. Yeah. I'm excited for that trip down there, just so you know. Like, I've been thinking and thinking. We got other stuff we're bringing to cook day before, day after, whatever. It's going to be a fest for us. Oh, you know? Yeah. Yeah.
I've been going through this menu in my head, and I have to start pulling away from all the beef that we have, because I think at this point we're approaching a quarter of a cow.
We got outstanding beef too, don't we?
Yeah, we do.
Yeah.
We got a surplus of beef.
So fill everybody in on what we're talking about. We're going to go ahead and announce it in the Smokeslinger, you know, pit owners group on Facebook. That's right. That's where the official announcement's going to be. So if you're not a member on there, please go over there and join. But go ahead, Dave.
So Saturday, March 8th, around about one of the communities of Kaufman, Texas, could be Canton, Texas. It could be Terrell, Texas, around that area, within a 30-mile range of that area. We're going to have a Smokeslinger barbecue meetup for our fans, for those that already own, those that have a strong interest, and those that just want to come out and have a damn good day. Cracking open a cold one. Let's get that on camera.
I already did that.
I know the radio people heard that. And that's, you know, it's beer and beef and pork and maybe some lamb, probably some innards as well, because we're going to go from the rooter to the tutor on that thing. We're going to go snout to hoof all the way through.
Yeah. You know, that's the thing they cook around here, talking about that. You just said it up in St. Louis and around in there, the river bottoms and stuff is pig snoot. I don't know if anybody ever cooked that or not. It's kind of like a bacony sort of a deal, almost like cross between jowl and bacon is what I understand. Skin on, typically. It's just they just take the snoot, fillet it, roll it flat, and cook it up. Have you ever seen anybody do that out where you're at?
Well, I've seen people eat quite a few pieces of the pork. So yeah, the cheeks, the snout, the pork knuckles, the feet, the tail. Mm-hmm. There's just about everything on that pork is edible. Everything. Oh. Ears. We usually take the ears, smoke them, and give them to the dog. But again, nothing goes to waste.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So let's talk about some cuts. You kind of got me in there at the beginning. We were talked about the whole rib cage, like bacon and ribs and membrane and all going for it. Hit us with some other cuts there. You know, like which do you prefer, your pork shoulder, pork butt, you know, the picnic side of that, the whole shoulder? What do you think?
So here we go.
That's the front shoulder.
This is a common misconception. When people say pork shoulder or pork butt, I think it's time we clear this up. It's a common misunderstanding. Right away, pork butt and pork shoulder. Frank, when we break it down for the listeners, it's the same thing. Pork butt isn't from the pig's rear end. It's actually from the upper part of the shoulder. The shoulder cut, sometimes called a picnic roast, is the lower part of the leg. The butt has more marbling. It makes it perfect for pulled pork, while the shoulder is leaner and just a little bit tougher.
Yeah.
So, you know, when we're thinking about this again, I'm going to try to do this for the listeners, for those that can see this, they see me pointed at my shoulder.
Yeah.
So when we're talking a pork shoulder, you're going to get the portion that's part of the arm and then going back to the scapula, which is when we think on a human being, the shoulder blade, it's that whole portion. Mm. What we usually use, whether we're making pulled pork or we're cutting it up and cubing it for sausage, is the Boston butt, many times a boneless butt, because I know that for many people out there, getting that bone out, it has an S curve to it, and you have to be pretty good with your knife skills in order to get that bone out properly. After you do it a couple of times, it's a little more. It gets conical on the inside. Yeah. By conical, I'm talking more like a seashell. It gets a little bit tough, but look, you know, at the end of the day, if you're going to take this, you're going to make this into pulled pork anyway, it really doesn't make a difference if you don't have those surgeon skills, as long as you have some type of knife skills.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm not watching the comments, by the way. I apologize, guys. I've been over here so fixated by what we've been talking about. Should probably give some shout outs here in a minute too. But yeah, whenever you're cooking that whole shoulder and you got the butt or the pork butt section, which is usually about, you know, 8 to 10 pounds roughly with the bone in, that bone just pulls out so easy. And it's always good showmanship to take that bone and just kind of moosh up your pork and just show off a little bit how cool it is. And, you know, then you got pulled pork. But yeah, it does take some skill to quickly get that bone out of a pork butt. There's also a little piece of trick cartilage in there that a lot of people, when they cook that butt, they'll pull out that bone. But there's a chunk of cartilage in there that gives a real nasty bite. And sometimes I've seen if you overcook a butt, it'll actually moosh up and it'll just kind of like render a little bit. But if you have a butt that's cooked the proper tenderness, you might want to look for that a little bit and just pull that out first. And then pull the bone out. It's a lot easier to find before you start mooshing it up, you know.
It is.
That's one of my pet peeves, is I hate that bite with that. I'm always the guy that gets it with the cartilage.
You're never the guy that gets the money muscle. You're never that lucky.
Well, no, I mean, I always get little pieces of it, but I mean, like, you just like, there's this story I got about the best pulled pork ever. Anybody that's OG smoker builder will remember that moment. We had been drinking some apple pie that was legit from them Cajuns down there. My buddy 40 Creek brought it up, and we were cooking pork on his pit. And I just went in there and just like, best pulled pork sandwich ever. I just took right into the top of that butt and put that whole fat cap and everything right on a sandwich and big old chunk of homemade coleslaw and just right in. I gave it to my buddy, Rod Crafter, actually, Terry Cree. And he took a bite of it and he was like, yep, absolutely. That is the best pulled pork sandwich ever. But see, I never get that one. I always get the little cartilage thing mixed in there. Anyway.
You know, when they say that a guy has no luck, that's not true. You're very lucky. You get that.
I'm very lucky.
You're the luckiest guy. Yeah.
Yeah. So talking about the money muscle, which muscle is it? I think the collar. It's the collar is what I think it is. Right in the, like where your collar goes down to meet your shoulder from your neck. Is that true?
So you're thinking it's the trapezius muscle.
It's the super marbled. Like, it's got marble going both ways. And it's like pre-marked for you into little medallions.
Mm-hmm.
And we've always said that's the collar end of the butt.
You know, you might be correct. I'm actually stumped. I knew we were going to get the trivia questions, but you got me on that one.
That's me trying to trick you. Yeah, it is. So you can get a pork butt that's called a collar trim. And that's the most popular amongst modern day competition barbecue guys. Back in the day, we had this rule in KCBS called the intact muscle rule. That was a cooking deal there. But also, you couldn't cook any piece of pork that was less than 5 pounds. And so by the time you deboned a butt, like you could debone a butt and cook that collar side to get the money muscle and then just pull everything else off, right? But nowadays you can just cook the collar and just cook the muscle because the rule changed. So there you go. But yeah, collar trim is a great little cut. And then of course, moving on down, I don't know the muscles that are down in the forearm or the picnic side. Mm. Is that what's really called, the picnic?
Yeah, it's a picnic shoulder. But usually the picnic shoulder is going to come down to, let's just call it your elbow. So you're getting the bicep and the tricep in that, but then you're not getting the foreshank down to the hoof. And again, I'm remembering that, you know, the way that I'm explaining this using human anatomy, which is, you know, I'm not a veterinarian. Forearm. Yeah, the forearm, let's say that. Yeah. Exactly. But, you know, when you make a full picnic shoulder, and I think in the Hispanic population, as well as in the Filipino population, it may have the same name or differentiating very closely. It's called pernil.
Okay.
And that's that whole shoulder that's cooked up. And man, that would
rice from the butt of the shoulder all the way down to the picnic end.
With that, all the way down to the picnic end. That's your full shoulder, skin on.
Yeah.
I've seen slits put into the skin and then different seasonings that are put in so that underneath the skin it's getting the flavor. And then later on, when they're serving this, there's just so many different sides that go along with this pernil. It's delicious and it's well roasted. Those that do it very well.
Cool. Now we're going to go on back to the rear of the animal. Mm-hmm. Let's just talk about hams real quick. So the ham, everybody, when you say ham, everybody just instantly thinks cured hams that are hung and cured. But you can just cook a ham just like a pork butt. It's a little bit different texture. It's going to be a little more stringy, to my recollection. You have any experience with cooking that?
Yes. However,
the way that
I do a ham is, and I call it it's not the pink ham. It's not the one that most people think of when they think of their spiral ham or their honey glazed ham. It's not the Christmas ham. So the way that I do a ham is I get that entire rear of the whole leg of the rear, the whole ham from a butcher, and then I'll debone it. So I'm taking out the hip bone, I'm taking out the long bone, and then I'll stuff it and we'll tie it sort of like a porchetta and then roast it that way. So that when you slice it up, you have all that delicious juice that's seeping out of it. And all the other stuffing that we put inside. And by stuffing, we're stuffing it with cheese, breadcrumbs, broccoli rabe, spinach, some long hots. So you have like an entire fiesta, let's just say.
Inside.
And then whether it's being sliced up or carved, every bite is delicious. And we tend to use that later to make sandwiches. The same way that they make these Philadelphia Italian pork sandwiches, although they're using an entire boneless pork and then rolling it up. It's actually, you're getting the bacon, you're getting the loin. It's pretty much the entire cavity, the trunk of the pig that's then rolled up. And that's why that tastes so good, because you have the bacon in there.
Is that what Carlton's talking about right there with scrapple? Does that come off on this end?
No.
Or is that a different cut?
So scrapple is every cut that's left over. Scrapple is very popular with the Pennsylvania Dutch out in Lancaster, or out in the Amish that are out in Ohio and other areas. Scrapple is a breakfast item. You take all the little bits and pieces that are left from the pork, and then you kind of squeeze that together into a log, almost like you were making a foie gras or a pate. And then that is then cut into slices, thick slices, and put right there on your flat top. So if we were looking at the smoke slinger, you would put this right onto the plancha, hot as can be, and fry that up. And that's scrapple.
Is it cured?
It's not cured. No. The only thing that's getting cured is if you had a healthy heart beforehand. The cure for that is this. You certainly will clog up your arteries.
Yeah, I get that. Yeah.
Yeah. We're going to need a pharmaceutical sponsor with the types of foods we're talking about.
Sure. Yeah. Actually, I don't believe that animal fat is bad for you, by the way. I think animal fat is much better for you than vegetable fat.
I agree. I agree. The whole push for margarine, bad idea. Get back to tallow. I'm on board with that. Nothing tastes better than when you fry things in duck fat, beef fat, pork fat. Who doesn't love
lard,
that?
Lard, baby. Come on. Yeah. We used to buy just nothing but lard. You know, we wouldn't get shortening. We wouldn't get vegetable oil and stuff like that. There are some things that turn out a little bit better with shortening, I suppose, than lard, like when you're baking and stuff like that. But for the most part, lard all the way, man. That's what I'm talking about. Cool. That's what scrapple is. Okay. So I've never had it. We're going to have to figure that one out at some point. Don't know if we can make that easy, when we're like, I guess we just, it's all the trim you're saying.
That's correct. Yeah.
From any part.
We can easily make that. It's no problem.
Yeah. Okay. So while we're talking about trim, what is the kind of ham that you just debone everything and then you put this whole thing in a casing? You don't grind it. You just put the whole chunks in there, and I don't know what you bind it with. Is it like a meat glue or something? Is that a capicola ham?
Oh, I see where you're going. That's the COPPA, COPPA. That's
my terminology is too Missouri for this.
So the COPPA, you're now getting to that neck muscle you were talking about.
Okay.
The COPPA, that's taken, and then, yes, that's put into a net. After being seasoned and all, it's put into a net. There's no meat glue. Or the other thing you can do is use small pork shoulders or pork butts if you wanted to. And it'll do the same thing. And then you make your gabagool. Spicy gabagool.
Excuse me?
Or as they say elsewhere, capicola ham.
That's what we say.
Yeah, it's like, not capicola.
Okay.
Just like it's not mozzarella.
Gotcha.
Or gnocchis. These are words that don't exist.
Gnocchis is a potato noodle, isn't it?
Wow. Why don't you just call it a pierogi?
A pierogi? I don't know, man. I was just born this way. I can't help it.
Oh, you gotta. They're like a mezzaluna type of pasta that's rolled up. Yes, there's some potato on the inside, and you take you have your dough, you stuff it with the potato, and you just gently roll it, and that goes right into the boiling water, cooks, and you serve that up with like a nice pesto.
Yeah, it's good stuff. I know that. I like to eat them. I may not be able to say them, but I can eat them. So, okay, so we've covered the, is there anything else on the ham end of this animal we should discuss? Like, for instance, we can talk a little bit about curing, or we can come back to that when we go to the cooking methods and techniques, maybe?
True, yeah, yeah. No, but I was thinking, since you're on the back, and we still have the shanks, you still have the pork shanks to do. You have the four shanks, and you have the front shanks. Maybe I just said that wrong. So the four shanks would actually be the front, wouldn't they? But then you have the hind shanks. Yes, I had that backwards. Right. So you have the shanks, which are great. As you know, when we do our Oktoberfest in Florida in October, as I spoke to one of the gentlemen there, we will be making Schweinhocks, which are the pork knuckles. We're going to be taking the kneecap, and we're going to also be using the shanks.
Yeah.
And those are going to be done low and slow until they're ready. And then we're going to hit these things for about 20 minutes, real high heat, crisp up that skin on the outside. And then we're going to serve that up with some nice sauces. Let's just say some things that we're working on, like a black forest? I think it's a forest wives brown gravy that has a nice reduction sauce to it. So people are going to want to take that flight into Florida.
And how many are we cooking? Enough for us or enough for them?
Oh, no, there's going to be hundreds.
For they.
Yeah, for
we're
they.
We're cooking for hundreds. They.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
It's 35,000 people, dog.
That's it, you know?
Yeah.
There we are, front and center, with a new cooker that's going to be making its arrival. A big boy, still in R&D, can't get too much still into in it, but for a crowd that big, you know it's got to be pretty big cooker.
Yep. So now let's start talking about the middle section here. So at the very bottom of the animal, we got the belly. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows bacon. Everybody loves bacon. Bacon's like the constant in all the variables. Pork belly, burn ends, anything that you like to particularly do that might be a little out of the ordinary that you can think of?
Good question. Well,
Like I've had bacon sausage, which is like where you grind up some of that pork belly and make sausage with it. That's pretty darn good. Really fatty. There's a ton of fat right there. It's good to mix in with like regular sausage too, I suppose. But pork belly should be eaten on its own, man. I think it just belongs. And green is when it's uncured or fresh. And then cured is what you would call like traditional bacon.
Correct.
Yeah.
Cold smoke.
So center cut is the good stuff because there's not that little hooky thing at the end of it that like curls up out of the pan.
Right.
You know, that you can't deal with. Yeah. So center cut. I always tell Lisa, look for the center cut. Look for the center cut. She knows now.
Talking a whole slab of bacon.
Well, just like if you go buy just a pound or 2 pounds or whatever, you got to look at the slices and ID like where it came from. Center cut is like the legit rectangle slice that cooks really nicely. Okay. Otherwise, you're getting the edge trim, and that's where the little curly Q lives.
I got you. See, I take that whole, like when we began this conversation, I'm taking that whole slab of bacon. That's available at places like, you know, your Costco, your Sam's Club. I take the whole thing and go from there. But that mm-hmm. other concept I was telling you about, that whole thing with the, where you got the rib meat in there with the pork belly, that's something special in itself. What comes to mind when I'm just thinking about pork belly, I'm thinking about that whole bacon, yeah. is cutting that into 1 inch to 1.5 inch strips. Mm-hmm. And then I take a wooden dowel and stick it into it and candy that. I smoke it up, cook it up, and then candy it on the outside. And then that's probably one of the most delicious treats on a stick. Talk about like any type of tailgate item, any tailgate you go to, you start handing out candy bacon on a stick like that. Oh,
mm-hmm.
yep.
Yeah. So in the butchering process now, we've got the pork belly, which is the outside of the animal. That's the skin. We're coming from the skin inward towards the middle of the animal. We've got the bacon, which is a fairly large pork belly. It's like the mm-hmm. whole side and underside. And then you've got inside of that is your ribs. Correct. That's the whole rib cage. And so whenever we were home butchering with Jumpin' Jim up here, with Jim, went up and would do the hog killing with him all the time. And that's where I kind of learned to cut my way around on some stuff. Not that I'm any good at it. I'm not like you or nothing. But Jim would always holler across the room at whoever's pig it was, and he would say, "You want bacon or you want ribs? Because we're going to cut one or the other." Basically, what happens is I guess there is a fine line inside that pork belly that a butcher is trained to cut exactly in that little vein of fat so that he can preserve enough pork belly to make a slab of bacon and get the ribs. But we were cutting a lot of pigs, and it was just us, and we were just like hammering through because not everybody wanted ribs. So what is your perspective on like where's that line at? That's what I've always wondered.
I haven't done
it's basically like 3/8 of an inch, no uh-huh. more, up from the top of the bone, the outside of the bone, like the outside of the animal is what it seems like. So, or in a production environment, are we favoring one or the other just like Jim did?
I think that comes down to, I'm going to just call that personal choice.
It's an audible.
Yeah. I don't think there's a right or wrong answer to that one.
So the bacon rib has become famous in some of the social media circles and a few restaurants down there. And the bacon rib is where we just leave the bacon on the rib.
That's correct.
We just cook that dang thing. And it is absolutely phenomenal.
Yes.
So, okay, so now we're going from the chine bone, which is right is a chine right here on the breastplate.
Yes, it is.
That's the chine bone.
Yep.
And so we're basically splitting that animal in half long ways, and we start at the chine bone that's at the bottom of the pork belly, and we're starting to roll up towards the top of the animal. Now we go from spares, which are the bottom, and then we get up into baby backs, which is the top half, kind of on the loin side, backs.
That's exactly what that is.
Yeah. So if you did a bacon rib and you did the entire, this is what I'm saying to do. I think you were on the same page with this. When we do the meat up, even if it's not a whole one, some of it, I don't know. We got to figure that out. We'll have to do an audible and figure that out. But I want to cook from the loin. I'm talking all the way down to the chine bone, one chunk. I want to do that whole thing.
Okay.
It's like tomahawks.
The only thing with that is, now remember, we got to split, you got to split the chest open, right? So we got to,
well, he's going to be cut. He's going to be in half already when we get him down.
This isn't a field dressed pig. You're not getting,
if you want, we can do whatever you want.
I thought we were getting in there with the saw and we were going to cut this thing.
We can.
And then use our, you know, strength. And crack that chest open, because you got to crack those bones. You got to get that open.
See, I don't know, man. I just like, I've ate so much pork and I've ate a lot of whole hog pork. And then I've just took those cuts and, you know, done different things. Like just go ahead and separate it out, quarter it out.
Okay.
Whatever. Get the belly cut, like block it up, I think is what they call it. And I've cooked those blocks like that. I think I enjoy cooking the blocks more than I do like the entire animal. I don't know. I've had a lot of fun cooking pork over the years. Matter of fact, Jim Compart, that Duroc pork that he makes, Compart Duroc, we ordered, I don't know, three whole hogs from him one time, and they came in on halves. And I kind of panicked because I thought everybody was going to want to do like a whole hog. Actually, Jim brought his butcher equipment down. We just put on a butchering class right there in the shop. And that's what we did. We just took the whole center section and hung that thing in what I called my hog coffin at the time. Man, was it good. It was just so good. The whole thing. It was awesome.
I think based upon what we're talking about here, we get a whole hog and we split it. It's still, all we're going to do is splay the pig out. So that way we can do exactly what you're talking about. And you can have that entire rib going from the breastplate back to the spinal cord, right? Because that's the direction of the ribs. Let's just talk about the thoracic session. Because for everybody out there in radio land, in order to understand this one, your rib cage, which starts at your sternum, right? Mm-hmm. It's going to go there, and then it's going to wrap around, and it's going to come back to your spinal cord. So essentially what we're talking about is splitting the rib cage and then being able to lay the pig out, splayed out, so that its arms and legs are out to the side as if it was laying in a prone position. And we'll cook it that way. And then towards the end, flip it over so that the skin side is now down on the fire. We're able to crisp that up. And now that point that you're talking about with the mopping, that's where mopping process comes into play. Yeah. That's very Rodney Scott of you, by the way. I just want to let you know, that is the way that Rodney Scott Barbecue happens to do theirs. And then towards the end, they come in with a knife, and that's when they start slicing off large pieces and putting into their bus tubs to be able to bring it out for service, whether they're going to do chopped pork, pulled pork, or anything else that's going to come off of that hog. Great idea.
Now, if we went ahead and broke up that midsection, what'd you call it, thoracic?
So you have your cervical, which is your neck,
that's
thoracic,
a big word.
Which is your neck, your cervical. Then you have thoracic, which is the chest area. And then you get into the lumbar section where everyone says as they get older, I have low back pain. That's the, that's the lumbar region. And after that, you get down to your tailbone, which the little piggy has. He has a tail.
Yep.
And that's your sacral area and your sacroiliac joint.
So in the thoracic section, did I say it right?
You said it.
Okay. All right. So if we went to blocking that up, if you had a whole hog and you wanted to cut it up yourself, by the way, do not be afraid to cut up a pig on your own. Just don't be afraid to do it. It's the simplest thing in the world. I mean, sure, if you don't have a bandsaw, there can be some technical stuff that you got to get into, but a Sawzall, like Dave always says, I've seen it done a bunch. Get a Sawzall, very clean, get a brand new blade, go for it. You know, it's not that scary. Or if you really are afraid to use a Sawzall, you can get actually a bone saw that you can actually take and cut through some of those tough joints. But pork is so forgiving all the way around. It's very forgiving in the butchering process because you're not going to mess it up. It all tastes good. And then it's also very forgiving in the cooking process. The safe cooking temperature for pork now is 145 after they got rid of the guy out there in Vegas that was messing it all up with the trigonosis bacteria that was going on. I remember that. And so now there's no danger of trichinosis, and so they lowered the pork temp, I don't know, 2017, I think, is when they did that. And you can cook it just like beef. You know, I just did some reverse sear loin chops on the smoke slinger. I have to edit the video and publish it, and man, were they good. I pulled them at 133, and then as we talked last week on our steak episode, we talked about reverse sear and carryover temperature and stuff. And I reverse seared those things, pulled them at 133, tended it, let them come up to 145. And it was magic. I'm telling you, don't overcook your pork. But anyway, do not be afraid to cut up pork. Anyway, if we're going to go ahead and cut that midsection up, we just talked about ribs, like that baby back and the spare rib is all one piece. Mm-hmm. And so we're cutting that horizontally, the length of the animal. And I don't remember exactly where to cut. Isn't it just like a few inches below the loin?
It is.
Yeah. And then you're doing that same thing between that you do with the pork belly and the spare. There's like this gold vein in there that you're trying to figure out where you want to cut to pull the pork belly up, because spare ribs are pork belly, basically. We're pulling that off. We've got the spares, which is my favorite. The baby back ribs are at the top of the carcass, and we're just kind of following that line, giving us some meat on the ribs, and then you've got a pork loin right there on top. Is that true?
That's correct. So when we talk about up and down, let's just clarify this. So now we're talking the back of the pig. You're back to its spinal column. That's your baby back ribs that are coming off the spinal column, because right underneath that is your loin. Whereas when we're talking about your spare ribs, your St. Louis ribs, that's coming off of the bacon portion, which you're correct about. That's getting us back to the chest. So we have the anterior of the animal and we have the posterior. The posterior just happens to be its spinal column, even though that side is not facing the posterior. It's actually facing up, not down.
Yeah.
That's just how that is. You have your ventral side and dorsal side. You have your anterior and your posterior.
Yeah. And you take that pork loin. Now, here's a few things I like to do with pork loins. I love cooking with pork loins. I like to cut them into chops.
Mm-hmm.
Butcher's, you know, cutter, pitmaster's choice, whatever you want to do. You can go thin, like for breakfast, or you can go really thick for like a really good pork chop dinner at night. But the loin is chops. Whenever you see pork steaks, that's the shoulder. That's the butt. And that's a certain section of the butt, I found out. It's just the part with the bone in it. And so the old boy that I used to ask him, what the heck is a country rib? I was just so puzzled with that, because around here they got a country rib and it does not cook up like a rib, like a spare rib. It's actually the neck part of the pork butt, I think, is what it's called. Neck on is what they call it. So what they do is they cut at the end of that bone where all them bones come together. There's like, you can just cut right at the end of that, and then that whole side of the butt comes off, and then they cut that into four rectangle-shaped pieces around here, and they call that a country rib. So I used to buy that, and I could get it for like $1.19 a pound, and I would buy all, I'd just say, just grind it for me. They would grind that whole thing up, and that's what all my sausage was made out of, was that neck, right? Anyway, the steak is the section of that pork butt that just has a bone in it. And then they cut across it in 5/8 of an inch around here is what they do. Remember, we did the pork steak throwdown deal, and everybody was like, what the heck's a pork steak? There's the different areas of the country. It was pretty awesome to see all that come together, you know. Like, people went out and paid their butcher a lot of money to cut that, you know, because they don't have them around there.
Right.
They have them where you're at, pork steaks?
They do. I can find those here. But again, you know, what's in the cabinet, what they have there sitting in the refrigerated cabinet is different than the type of cuts that you and I might prefer, you know, as far as the thickness and the part of the pig that they're using. You know what I do with pork loin? I like to take that bone in. And I like to make double cut pork chops out of that. So I'm going back to the spine, and then right underneath that, when we talk about the baby backs, it gets right down into the loin. I cut those out. I make double cut pork chops out of that portion. So you're talking delicious pork loin, and then right there with that baby back rib meat, it's all together.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to share a picture for the guys on the radio listening, on podcast listening. Here we go. Bam.
Look at that.
That's what I do right there, boy. That's two slabs of Canadian bacon is what that is. That's my favorite thing in the world to make out of pork loin. Really good stuff. Canadian bacon, like if you look at like the pizza place and you say, put Canadian bacon on my pizza, and it's like shrug, it just tastes like tough ham. This is different. This is not that way. My buddy Kelly Ricks, he's a smoker builder guy. He lives up about an hour away from me here. Anyway, that's his recipe that we used. That was the very first time I ever did it. And it just has this really, really great flavor. It's very salty, like anything cured. There's a lot of different spices in there, but some clove in there, and it just tastes really hammy. And you can slice that thick, thin, cold, hot, doesn't matter. You can do whatever you want with it. I really enjoy Canadian bacon.
You know, you're putting a challenge out there. I'm telling you right now, what's the difference between Taylor ham and Canadian bacon.
Well, it's just a bit of meat, I guess.
Well, Taylor ham, do you know where Taylor ham originates from?
I never heard of it.
Taylor ham, which is what you find on your pork roll sandwiches. When someone says, like, well, we have a couple sandwiches here in the Northeast. You have a bacon, egg, and cheese, salt, pepper, ketchup, or you get yourself a Taylor ham sandwich with egg. Ketchup. So the Taylor ham originally came from New Jersey. The texture
ketchup is for women and children, dude.
What's that?
Ketchup is for women and children.
Well, when you're talking about some of these barbecue sauces, for example, they're vinegar-based, mustard-based, and some of them are ketchup-based. That's your tomato base. Ketchup, gotcha. Vinegar, and tomato sauce.
Well, ketchup is for cheaters that don't want to go to the root and make their own barbecue. I'm just kidding.
So here's the thing. Taylor ham, pork roll, is coarser, more processed than Canadian bacon. It's similar to a firm sausage. It's salty, slightly smoky, with a touch of sweetness, and it's sold in rolls or slices, usually pan-fried before eating. Mm-hmm. It's a staple in New Jersey for breakfast sandwiches, especially the famous Taylor ham, egg, and cheese on a hard roll. Whereas Canadian bacon comes from Canada, but it's also popular here in the United States. It's leaner and more like ham or a thick slice of smoked pork loin. Yeah. It has a mild, sweet, smoky, and slightly cured flavor, and it's more like a traditional ham than it is a sausage. That can come pre-cooked and can be eaten straight from the package, so it's great to sit in the front seat after you go to the grocery store and just, like, cold cuts. On the way home, you just eat the cold cuts. I don't know. Maybe that's just me. And then it's used in Eggs Benedict and pizza, like if you were going to make the cardinal sin of making Hawaiian pizza where you put pineapple on your pie. That's another discussion for another day.
Pineapple, like, on your pie.
Say you can't do that. You can't. I say a pizza pie. What do you call it?
It's called a pizza.
Just a pizza. Okay. It's a just pizza. Just a pizza. Pie. Yeah.
It's round or square, and it's got meat, cheese, and tomato sauce.
The similarities between the two is it really comes down to being a breakfast meat. Unless you're having breakfast for dinner. And then I guess it's two times a day meat.
Yeah, so pork loin for me, I like to make Canadian bacon. I like to make chops. I do thin for breakfast, thicker for dinner, or just for chowing down around the pit. They cook super fast. It's a great cut to do like a 145 finish temp once it's like rested and carried over and finished at 145. It's like the perfect cut for that. I really enjoy pork loin. Now, the tenderloin, on the other hand, is different. Correct. Tenderloin is on the inside of the rib cage. I didn't know that until we started doing those butcher deals, I don't know, back in 2017 or so. I was like, oh, it's on the inside. Like when Jim's grabbing and pulling that membrane out, the big membrane, and then he's grabbing a hold of that tenderloin there and just flays it off. Nice little super tender. I guess what makes it so tender is that that's not a muscle that's like getting worked a lot. That muscle's more like a cushion in there, I suppose. I don't know what its function is.
It has very little function. It's not vestigial, but you're correct. Because it's not used, it's so tender. And then when it comes down to when we're dealing with the size, your pork loin is obviously more
10 pounds.
Yeah, it's big. The pork tenderloin is about the circumference of a Susan B. Anthony coin, but you're looking 1.5 inches, maybe 2 inches in diameter, or where, and even that's very large. It's usually about 1.5 inches. Whereas your pork loin can easily be 3 inches plus in diameter. The circumference on that can be measuring around 5 to 6 inches.
Yeah. It's like on the inside of the rib cage up towards the spine, I think is where it's at. And I think its job is just to be a cushion for all the laying around that pig does. I don't know. I think everything's got a tenderloin in it, though. Deer's does, too.
Yep.
You know, so cool, man. So now let's get on up into some cooking methods real quick. So pretty much my go-to for big muscles is always going to be to smoke them first. That's just kind of how I'm going to go on the leaner muscles. I'm going to want to cut those up into steaks and do that, or if I do like a pork loin, I'm going to want to brine it or cure it first. And then I'm going to want to cook it at a medium temp, like 240, something like that is what I'll cook that at for a while and get some color on it. The Pork loin has a lot less fat in it. Like Dave said, it's a lot leaner. So you don't want to overcook that. It gets dry and powdery at a low temp. While you can fake it out and make some pulled pork loin, I guess, it's not necessarily the most desirable thing to do. What do you think? You got anything to bring into that?
So I do. So getting back to that pork loin, and you're correct, the marbleization is not there. It doesn't have the same fat content. That's why, you know, it is such a delicious piece of meat. It's so juicy. However, what we've done in experimentation, and I actually learned this from a butcher a long time ago. He called it a Kansas City pork chop. What he did is he rendered. No, he didn't lie.
They blame Kansas City.
I've been able to replicate it. So it wasn't a gimmick. Whether you take the pork lard, the leaf lard, and you render it down, or you just get a hold of lard, you have to get this down to liquid form. Then it's put into a syringe, or we'll just call it in this case, your meat needle that you're going to use for your injections. And you're going to inject that pork loin with the fat. You're putting it right back in. So think about this concept. You're adding marbleization to a tender piece of meat that never had any of this beforehand.
It's like tallow injection on a brisket.
Yes.
There's a lot of guys talked about injecting tallow and broth or just tallow into briskets. So I suppose maybe you save the juice from the ham, mix it up with some pork lard, save the bacon grease.
You just gave me an entire Easter idea. After we cook down this.
Hey, barbecue nerds, man.
Yeah. We take this leg of pork. We take that ham, cook it down. All that juices, save that for the side instead of the sandwiches. Add some more lard to it and then inject it into a loin for the future.
Yeah.
Let it sit there, you know, inject it, wrap it in saran wrap, put it away for a couple of days so it has the opportunity, you know, to coagulate.
Yeah.
And then cook it up just like that. Or maybe put it on the rotisserie, and then the same way the churrascarias do, just take thin slices off.
That would be awesome, by the way. You talking about the meat tower that's just like tacos.
The meat tower, when it goes vertical, like the bomba that they use for when they're making the tacos al pastor.
That's al pastor, yeah.
In the Middle Eastern cultures and in the Greek cultures, now you're getting into those gyros, or you're talking about your souvlaki, or you're talking about your shawarma, where it's on that same type of vertical rotisserie. Yeah. Oh, I like where we're going with this.
I do too, man. It's fun.
I don't know where we're getting one of these.
Well, see, but you got to cut it all up raw though, right? You slice it real thin. So you need a slicer, debone everything.
Correct.
Get rid of the cartilage and whatever else is in there that's weird. Leave the fat in though, because fat is flavor. Slice that thing up really thin. Start stacking it on the tower, the needle thing. Did you ever see the guys? It takes like three or four of them guys to stack that thing up on the returner.
Oh yeah,
on Instagram, they pick that big upside down, you know, pyramid of meat, stick it up on that deal, and start turning it. Dude, awesome. Hey, you know what we did not talk about though? Back on the cuts is barbacoa. Barbacoa is the hog's head, right?
Right.
Down in the ground. Yeah, so you can't throw that away. Nothing wasted. That's what bratwurst. That's nothing wasted.
What about, you know, you forgot about one other portion. What are you doing with the innards?
I don't know.
How about taking all that intestine to make sausage?
You could. Yeah. The lining. I don't want to be the guy to dig it all out and clean it all out.
The way to do it is you have to take this is like such a process. You got to turn it inside out and then run water through it.
Inside out. It's just like unbelievably difficult.
It's a very difficult process. That's why it's much easier to, you let a packer do it where they're already packed in salt. They're ready to go. And then you just put them in water.
We just rinse them out.
That's it.
Like we get the salted down ones, natural casings, warm water. Rinse and rinse and rinse and rinse and rinse.
It's a very long, filthy process doing it, and I've never done it. But I was just adding to this conversation of what do we do with the innards?
Hey, sidebar conversation here real quick, because I don't think we're really on too much of a timeline here. My buddy Forrester, Mike the Forrester, another OG smoker builder guy, Him and I made breakfast sausage links one time. Never did it before. Anyway, he ordered on Amazon, he ordered the sheep casings because that's the breakfast sausage diameter is really small. And that's what the sheep casings is used for. Dude, you want to talk about, we thought they were bad. Like you open that bag, they smell rank. Mm-hmm. Them things do. That's factory. That's not bad. That's factory. Them things stink. The sheep ones do. You got to like, there's a whole process behind like how we looked it up. We Googled it because we're like, are these things bad? And we Googled it up and it said, nope, not bad. You just got to clean them a whole lot. Dude, that smell is so hard to get off of stuff. I can't imagine why anybody would want to make breakfast links. I'm out. Not it. So we not natural casings for sheep for breakfast sausage now. Not the way I do it. Have you ever dealt with sheep casings?
I've dealt with every part of the sheep. And from the time that animal is still alive to the time it dies, it still smells the same.
The whole thing?
Yeah, that's the sheep and the goat. Just if you've ever gone, forget about livestock auction. I mean, they stink there.
Oh, I've been all over them.
But the butcher shops already, like the slaughterhouses, there's just, you always know when they're working on goats and lamb. There's just that smell in the air. Much different than chickens or cattle or pigs. It's just a horrible smell. And a lot of people, for whatever reason, you know, they're not a big lamb fan. I love lamb. I love goat. I love all these tasty farm animals. I'm a member of PETA. I'm a person who eats tasty animals.
Eats tasty animals. Me too.
That's correct.
Hey, some of the guys in the comments are saying that audio is cutting in and out. Not for sure.
I wonder if it's me or you.
I don't know. I just checked my thingy deal there. Anyway, hope it's okay. Could be me. But anyway, so yeah, no go on the sheep casings. All natural hog casings are great. You know, just get them in the grocery store, in the butcher section, whatever. Get the bag. They're salted down. Rinse them out. All the trim goes in to the sausage. It's great. Good for you. Before that, what were we talking about? We were talking about...
Before we got into
sidebarred
the innards of the,
yeah, the innards. We were yeah, that's what it about was.
the correct temperatures. And I think we were about to start talking about maybe rubs or injections or sauces or even the right type of woods, things like that. Getting into the preparation. Now that we've discussed the primals, we've talked about what you can do with the primals. But now, how to prepare them.
Yeah. Take it away, Dave.
So, I think that I just think that this, you know, what it comes down to is, you know, with rubs and brines and marinades, it comes down to what works best. You know, when we're looking at dry rubs versus wet rubs, people fight over this one all the time. I'm someone who really enjoys dry rubs. I want to build a nice crusty bark. Wet rubs can be good for pork chops. But for ribs and butts, I'm dry rub all the way. And I think a good rub includes salt, paprika, garlic, onion, little sugar. But here's a question I have for you. Do you think mustard as a binder actually helps? Or like as far as with flavor, or is it just there for tackiness?
So that's an interesting question. I personally do not use binders. The binder is its job is exactly to do what you just said. It's just to bind the rub so it doesn't fall off. However, I watched a video. I can't remember who did the video, but it was Jerby on the video from Goldie's. And he said they just use hot water is what they use whenever they're rubbing down briskets or whatever. And the hot water just gets that top layer of fat to kind of get soft and maybe even start to melt a little bit and get some of that early that whatever's inside the meat to come out to the top that makes your rub wet. That's basically what we're trying to do. Whenever you layer rubs on a big muscle or any kind of meat, what you're trying to do is start that reaction with the salt and the brining, like it's going to dry brine and pull that salt down into that top layer of meat. And along with it, you're going to get an exchange that's pretty thin layer. You're going to get an exchange of some of the seasonings and then some of the juice coming out. And that's what's going to make your rub wet on the surface. And that's what we're trying to do. I believe that a binder inhibits that, unless the binder is in fact really salty and not thick. Like, with one exception, like whenever we're dealing with poultry, I do like to use a mayo binder. I think it's got something to do with the vinegar that's in the mayo. It does simply do something to the chicken. I don't know what it does, but under the skin, anytime you can get vinegar under the skin, between the skin and the meat, it's really going to have a good impact on your cook. But whenever it comes to a pork butt or ribs or something like that, we're trying to get this infusion of the flavors that are in that base layer of rub, which we've talked about in the past. We wanted to do some stuff talking about layers of seasoning, you know, which I would love to get into that. I'm not as schooled in it as I need to be, but I do know quite a bit from just my competition stuff and different things like that. But anyway, that's how you get a smoke ring. It's a chemical reaction between the infusion process with the salt, pulling in those seasonings, and then whenever you put it in the cooker and you start to cook and smoke the food, you can get a mild, without smoke, you can get a mild, you know, smoke ring on something just chemically. But whenever you put that smoke on it, that's when you're going to have a noticeable, a really good smoke ring. So that's how I feel about binders anyway. If you just let the rub sit on there long enough and just be careful with your hands and stuff, you're not going to like knock it off. The problem is you rubbed it and threw it in the cooker too fast. You should have let it sit on the counter for, you know, 30, 40 minutes, something like that. It's totally okay to do that.
So when you just mentioned, just getting back to the vinegary mayonnaise, I think you're talking about a product like Duke's mayonnaise that has that twang in it. First, your Hellman's and your Miracle Whip. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, because that's first thing that came to mind was the only mayonnaise with twang that would be Duke's.
Yeah.
Going over to the mustards. See, now there's a lot of different type of mustards. We have that yellow mustard. We have that spicy brown mustard. And then for our aristocrats out there, we have our Grey Poupon. Which one of these are you going with?
I'm going with the Stone Ground. If I'm going to use a binder like that, I'm going to go Stone Ground. Now, I've never noticed personally an impact from mustard versus mayo versus something else as a binder with rub. I've never noticed an impact flavor-wise. You're not going to taste the mustard, I don't think. But if you use – it will definitely help with bark, you know, because now you're getting – You got a thicker layer of rub. If you have a drier cooking environment, you will get some serious bark going on, which is something else to talk about with bark formation. Is a moist environment is the enemy of bark formation. It just prevents bark from drying out and caramelizing properly. It actually, like, you'll have wet bark. If you touch it, it'll pull off on your finger. Like braising chicken, your rub never sets up as a thick layer of bark.
What you're talking about is the reason why. I will take the pork first, and I will salt it, and then put it onto a wire cookie sheet rack and let it sit like that for several hours so that it pulls the water out. Mm-hmm. After that point, now I put on the other seasonings. I try not to use very much sugar at all, because that sugar over time is going to caramelize and it can burn. But I do add a bit of sweetness in there. I've even been known that towards the mid to the end of the cook, if I'm going to wrap a pork butt for pulled pork, I'm going to add some butter in there. I'm adding in honey. I'm adding in agave nectar. I may even add some brown sugar in. But now it's wrapped up in that tin foil. And all I'm really doing is now adding all that sugary flavor into it. So later on, even though the sugar is not going to penetrate into the middle of that pork shoulder at all, or that Boston butt, nonetheless, when it's finished and I'm pulling it and I pour all those juices over the top, it's a reason why you don't need a sauce. I've infused it with its own delicious flavors and some other flavors. But, you know, when you see these people, and I use the word butt for a pork butt, not as a place word, the rationale behind that is you're not reaching for Sweet Baby Ray's, which I see people do all the time. They're all buying Sweet Baby Ray's with their ribs. Towards the end, they got to shellac them with Sweet Baby Ray's.
Which, shout out to Sweet Baby Ray's. I mean, that rub, that sauce has been around for a long time, and it's still the people's favorite. It's Sweet Baby Ray's versus Blues Hog, pretty much. You know,
I see this used at time and time again at these barbecue competitions where everyone's super secret ingredient in their sauce that they don't want to talk about. It's always Sweet Baby Ray's.
Or Blues around here.
And then what they do after they get a hold of those is then they add in their own little concoction to it to call it their own sauce. But you're correct. The base is Blues Hog and Sweet Baby Ray's. Things that are available to any one of us.
I'm gonna share, because a lot of guys probably don't know. I'm gonna put a picture up here for the guys that are listening on the radio. You can go watch it on the YouTube there. Right there, bam. That one right there, Yardbird rub from Plowboys, has been a staple around here where I'm at from the get-go. And I've personally used it on poultry and pork. I really like just a good basic fine grind pork rub for my base layer on pork. You can put that on there, and it's got enough salt in it that it'll do a lot of this stuff we're talking about. That'll pull in, you know, the salt part of that rub will pull into the surface of your meat. It'll start to pull out the juices, like you're saying, that osmosis, whatever that reaction is. And we still get all that, you know, a lot of pork rubs have cinnamon in them, a little bit of cumin, some pepper, stuff like that. And we're getting that really good base layer of rub. Now, when we're talking about layers though, there was a guy, I don't know if anybody knows who he is, but there's a guy up in Kansas City, north up there, named Mike Trump. And he had a thing called Oak Ridge Barbecue, and that was his rub company. And I never met a man that was more knowledgeable about combining different flavors together with other flavors and creating new rubs and things like that. And anyway, I spent some time with him in what he called the rub room, which was a room under his garage that was where he actually did all the co-packing part of his business. And he told me one time, he was like, yeah, we're talking about competition barbecue and layers of flavor and stuff like that. And he said, yeah, a lot of guys, like back in the day, we would do like Cimarron Docks and Smoking Guns Hot. That was the two layers for pork. A lot of guys still use that. Matter of fact, most rubs out there are a derivative of those two or a combination of those two. It was like one of the winningest combinations in barbecue for the longest period of time. Anyway, he said, whenever you put rub one and rub two on at the same time, it's basically, that is the rub, to like just mix it in a bottle and put it on there, and that's what you got. That is one layer. It's not two layers of flavor that you put on at the same time. When you put it on, it takes time. That's the part of it. We got to be patient and let that rub do its thing inside the meat, and then go ahead and cook. And then the next step is that's when we do another layer, is later on after we've built some bark, things like that. Yeah, Black Ops, that's one of the rubs that he had. That was really great stuff. Yep, Mike Trump, he's out of business now, but I still have a little bit of Spogos upstairs. That was his salt, pepper, onion, garlic, and other seasonings, other spices.
So you're saying here, when you're talking about layering flavor, that it's different than when, say, you're doing like a chili competition, and then you do a dump of seasoning at specified times. That's not the same type of layering.
Well, you do have to time it. So like, we want to get that first reaction of get that infusion going on that base layer. We want to pull in that salt. We want to have the salt drag in with it, very thin layer of all the other seasonings that are mixed in, because they don't penetrate as far. So we need the salt to pull that in with it. And then all of that, if it's beef, it's the myoglobin. I don't know if that's what it is on pork. Whatever that juice is that comes out, you know, that magic juice that just appears out of nowhere, that like emulsifies that rub and helps that exchange go in and out of that thin layer of the surface of the meat. Then we're going to cook, and we're going to start to build some bark and get that thing rolling on there. Then whenever we get towards wrapping, let's say, or maybe when we flip, then we're going to actually dust it with something else. Now we've got a different reaction happening there. We've had some time for that other rub to get in. Now we've got that second layer. And then we're going to layer on with sauce and whatever else happens in that cook. We wind up with three actually, Donnie Bray told us back in the day in his class, Warren County Pork Choppers, which he was one of the winningest guys too for a long time. And he said, you want to reverse the layers of flavor. So you put the last thing you want them to taste is the first thing you put on. So it should go in reverse. So if we want them to taste, the judge or the person that's biting into this barbecue, we want them to taste the sweet, then the smoke, then the salt, then the heat. At the very end, we want them to get a little pleasant, little twitch of heat right there. And so if that's true, then we need to put the heat on first, then the salt, then we want to smoke it, then we want to put the sweet on. So we don't want to have a sweet layer of rub when we're cooking out the gate. We want to wait and add that later because that's the reverse order. Does that make sense?
I agree with you. That's what I was saying. When it came down to that pork butt, that pork shoulder, that's what I was saying. When it comes to the wrap, that's when I'm adding the sweetness is at the end. So that flavor, if you're grabbing that money muscle, it's cut up or you're getting that bark, that's where the flavor is. But later on, when we're pulling this pork and we're chopping it up, I'm taking all that liquid that's inside of that tinfoil and putting it in. So when I'm mixing it together, all of that is infused. But everybody still, they love the pieces of the bark. That's always the best portion.
Yeah. The bark is the best bite because that's where all that flavor lays, especially when we've let that smoke get on there and we built that, we got all that sugar and all that stuff working together. I should clarify though, it's not that we want to omit sugar or any particular seasoning from the surface of the meat, because we need some of that just to get that, like I said, just there with that, we want to get that bark forming, you know, so we got to have some sugar there.
Right.
Because that's the catalyst for getting that caramelization and stuff that we're looking for, what we call bark. Yep. So let me go on and on.
Here's a question I have for you, rapid fire. What is the biggest rib mistake that you see or that you've committed?
Overcooking, hands down, overcooking ribs. I'll show you a picture of not overcooked ribs. I happen to have a picture here. Oh, I wanted to show this so bad. Ready?
Yep.
Bam. Look at the hang on that slab of ribs, and they staying together right there. For the guys listening on the radio, them things are what? They're just bat wings. They're like
it almost looks like a V, an inverted V. I was going to say a U, but there's way too much of an angle right there in the middle to make a U.
It's not round. But wait, there's more. Look at that pullback on them bones, dog.
That looks delicious. And look, did you put a glaze on there?
That's literally, that is just old school competition barbecue ribs. The video was on the Smoker Builder YouTube channel. You got to go back to about 2020, summer 2020 on there. And that cook was, I hung 8 slabs of ribs in a drum smoker on a rib hanger. And I used some rubs and sauces from my buddy Eric Burkhart up in Jefferson City, Missouri, Uncle Bubs. Anyway, it was his seasonings and his hillbilly hog shine sauce was what that was.
Wow. So for those that are listening and can't see this, there is a mahogany shiny glaze on the outside of those ribs with the meat pulling back on, I think there was 9 bones or 10 bones on that.
Let's go back and count them.
And that meat is pulling back. I'm going to say 3/4 to an inch on average. And the color,
10 bones.
The color is amazing, but the shine, the glimmer, the sheen that you have coming off of there looks like you put a lacquer on the outside. It's so shiny.
I got another picture. You don't see it. This is one from this summer. They're not as shiny. Same video, different drum. But yeah, you still got that pullback. You still got the color. And then talk about like serving. This one right here, this is called, for the guys watching, you can't see me and Dave now, but that's called a Hollywood cut. I tried that a few times, turning that in. And what that means is that when you cut that rib, you're cutting up against its neighbors, leaving as much meat as you possibly can on that one bone. So we're sacrificing the bone on the left and the bone on the right and just getting that maximum meat quantity on that one bone so that whenever that guy bites into that rib, he's got a full bite right in the dead middle of that rib, pulling the bone clean, and all the meat stays on. And then he's going to, if he's like me, he's going to take bite number two because it was dang good. And he's going to rotate in his hands, and he's going to take another bite right out of the middle like the little kid used to do with the peanut butter sandwich in the commercial. He'd take a bite right out of the middle. That's what we do right there. We take the bite out of the middle of the other side of the bone, and we want the meat to stay on. That's how we know we got a properly cooked rib. Bone pulls clean, meat stays on. By the way, ding, shout ding, out to
you. You got it. Because the misconception is that you should have fall off the bone ribs. That means that they're overcooked. You want a tender bite, but with a slight bite. So these rib joints that are out there that are talking hot and heavy about how they have fall off the bone ribs. They're so good. I made them in my crock pot. I put them in a steamer and used liquid smoke. I did this. I did that. That's not how your ribs should be. And if that's the way that you've been raised, well, we got a couple of things to teach you here.
I think we all started out there because the ribs experience that we had growing up, possibly if we've never been around barbecue guys like us, the rib experience we had was like, it's unpleasant because you bite into it and you have to tear it off the bone.
Right.
You know, and so whenever we go to Chili's baby back ribs and they fall off the bone, we're just like, oh my gosh, this is the best rib ever, you know. And we get into that mode, you know, but then we need to correct it and pull back and get back into that, like the real, like you miss so much by overcooking or undercooking of the experience of eating a really well-cooked rib, you know. I was going to give a shout out to John Mann, a.k.a. Barbecue Man. He is not just a CBJ, but he's also a rep with KCBS, and you should follow him. He's a good dude. We've had a lot of fun together. He said he was trying to make it back down here to the sausage garage where we like to team up and make sausage. Good times. Yep.
So, you know, here's where fall off the bone ribs. This is where this changes. Different animal. If we were talking about plate ribs on that steer, if we go back to the beef side, that's the area where you want to be able to reach in and pull the bone directly out, and all the meat stays there because we're not taking off from the bottom like we do sometimes, not all the time with our pork ribs. We peel that filament off the back. With beef ribs, sometimes we don't squirt it all. Other times that's all we do is squirt. We never peel that layer off. And that's the one time. And boy, do you have a surprise coming. March 8th.
Holy smoke.
Let's just say that beef ribs, sort of, kind of, in one way or another, might be on this menu. I'm not saying in which way. I'm not saying which beef ribs, whether there's one or a three rack or several of these three racks. But somewhere along the way, we have to make sure that the bone pulls fully out of our dino ribs.
At least one bone.
Oh, I'm challenging you
for the camera.
We get all we are going to cook this thing to perfection. Awesome. In the words of correctional officer for lockdown, we are coming with our PhDs in
barbecueology.
There will be those that will need to defend their thesis to us because the questions are coming.
You know, I've been fortunate to cook with some really dang good cooks, man. You know, I've had a lot of fun with all of this barbecue stuff. The community is just insane. It's, you know, even with all the political climate that I just want to speak to this real quick, Dave. It's, you know, with all the political climate that's going on right now, you know who I haven't seen say one word about anything is the barbecue guys. There's people that like barbecue that are talking trash, but the real hardcore barbecue guys, like, that are in this to win it, like the guys in the comments here and stuff like that, you ain't gonna see that in their feed. They're just barbecue. It's like nothing ever happened. You know, that's kind of what I'm up to. Like, I just water off a duck's back, man. That, you know, the thing is that cavemen were cooking like this, and we still are today. So it's the one thing that no one's ever gonna be able to do anything with. What's up, Beth and Dave? Appreciate you guys. You're awesome. Beth and Dave Suss. Hey, pull up Bruce's comment there. What did he say there?
He says,
can you read it? I don't have my glasses on. What constitutes
overcooked ribs? If the rib is with texture that is somewhat with a crunch in it, that a sign of KCB eliminated rib?
KCBS.
KCBS.
So, overcooked ribs would just be that, like, it does actually fall off. Tenderness. So of all the way that you're scored in a competition, I think is what you're asking about, Bruce. You're scored on taste, tenderness, and appearance, of which each of those has like this modifier number. This you take whatever the real score is from the judges, and they get this math that they do as a corrective factor to what's called weight the numbers. And so it gives it a weighted number. And of those, tenderness is the highest weight. And then taste and then appearance, if I'm correct. John can correct me in the comments if he's watching. But I'm pretty sure it's tenderness is the most important. And I saw Richard Fergola, that's Fergalicious. He commented the other day on a thing. He said that if you get tenderness right, you're going to get your name called. Doesn't matter what the appearance or the tenderness is, or the taste as much as tenderness. If you can nail that every single time, you will win money. That's just how it goes. And so that's why it's so important, is to get what Donnie Bray called a pleasant bite. You just want somebody to get a really good bite is what you're after. And fall off the bone ribs, you'll know, because they'll be drier. They'll be falling apart. So the rest of the meat falls off. Now they don't have a handle to hold it with. Nobody wants to pull out a fork and eat a rib. You know, that's just kind of my opinion. We want to have, what is that good fat, Dave? Collagen fat?
Yep.
We want to have that collagen fat, because that's the thing that's going to just like melt when it hits your tongue, and you're going to get that really porky flavor or that real beefy flavor. You're going to lose all that if you overcook. It's just going to fully render out. You're not going to have it no more. And so you're going to lose the magic is what you're going to lose. Undercooked, it's not going to be rendered, so you're not going to taste it. And it's going to be tough to eat.
Right. So you're going to be pulling with your teeth to get it off the bone.
Yeah.
I would think that for those that are fairly new to barbecue, that the safest piece of meat for them to prepare is definitely going to be that Boston butt. Bone-in, it's a little cheaper than the boneless, but it has a lot of forgiveness, a lot of flexibility. If you overcook it, it's fine. You can just add a little more apple juice. You'll fix it.
They got pictures of pork butts.
There's a lot of ways to be able to fix something like pulled pork versus ribs. And then, you know, when we go back to our first conversation, we talk about brisket. Now you're getting into one of the most difficult cuts of meat to prepare. But for those that are first starting, easiest thing to start with is definitely going to be your pork butts. Easier than that is chicken thighs. But when we're getting into larger cuts of meat, where you know, you want to have a little bit more fun, you want to cook a little bit longer than just a couple hours, then definitely start with that Boston butt, bone in, and you know that you cooked it right. Like Frank said in the beginning, you reach in, you grab that bone, and if it pulls out easily, there's no meat attached to it, and after a couple of seconds, you see that any of the moisture that was on there from that hot bone just happens to evaporate, it dissipates, you've done it right. Great job. Yeah. Congratulate yourself. Move on to the next item.
Yeah. You know, something else I was just thinking about was with pork butts in regards to like what you should start with. If you're new to barbecue and you're nerding out with us here, my preference, I want to hear yours too, Dave, but my preference would be a Prairie Fresh Naturals pork butt. It's very heavily marbled. And you can get that at pretty much every Associated Wholesale Grocers kind of grocery store. Price Chopper in the Midwest has it, a lot of those. And it's you're going to get a great pork butt. And they're usually about $2 or less, you know, around here, $1.74 a pound all day long at Walmart for Prairie Fresh Naturals pork butt. What is your pick of the meal that you're going to look for?
That's a great price. $1.74 is an excellent price. I'm very price sensitive. You know, if I'm buying by the case, it's one thing. But if I'm walking in to buy individually, when I'm seeing that it's $2.19 for boneless or like $1.89 for bone in. I'm going to still take that one for $1.89, even though I'm paying for the bone and so forth and so on. It's fine because mm-hmm. I can get the bone out. I have the skill to be able to do that. And I think that for our listeners here and for our viewers, that again, it goes back to just practice. It's good knife skill. It's a difficult bone to get out. Most likely you're going to end up splitting your pork shoulder in half anyway, your pork butt, but go for it. And if you're going to go with a true pork shoulder skin on, it's delicious. When you're done, obviously the skin's going to get toughened up unless you know what you're doing, how to crisp it. But it's mm-hmm. a great insulation for keeping everything together. One of the things that we tend to find out about when we're doing a Boston butt is that as we're cooking it, not only does it start to shrink, but it also starts to pull itself away a little bit from the bone, and it almost mm-hmm. it gets to that point where it's so tender, it wants to fall apart.
Yeah.
When we're dealing with the shoulder, whether you're cutting slits into the skin or you're injecting it or you're able to gently get underneath the collar and get your whatever seasonings that you're going to use inside. I tend mm-hmm. to inject when I'm doing these type of cooks. Everything is held together. You'll see the skin pull down. You'll see things tighten up. But it's a safer alternative versus going without the skin. What about when talking about just, you know, getting back to that Boston shoulder, the Boston butt, do you trim the fat off or do you leave some of that on and just let it drip down off the side and self-baste?
Yeah, I leave all the fat on because here I'll show you my picture I wanted to show a while ago. I just stumbled upon this one day. I never saw anybody do it.
Oh boy.
But if you look at those butts, I don't know. Actually, I don't have my glasses on, but I think in that video anyway, on the Smokeslinger YouTube channel, I cross-hatched the fat cap on all of those butts.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at the YouTube channel, it's the How to Smoke 8 Pork Butts at Once video on the Smokeslinger Direct Heat Smoker, which, by the way, that I still have a couple of those butts left. We eat a lot of pork here. And for every meal, we make chili red, chili green. We make everything out of that pork butt. But when you crosshatch that fat cap, you crosshatch it, and then you get the seasoning down in there, and you put it on that cooker, and it starts to blossom like one of those onions. Like it just opens up, you know, and then you just sprinkle a little bit more rub on there to get down in the cracks and stuff, and you just let that thing cook like that. That's called the barbecue pit boys used to call that pitmaster privilege. I'm going to eat that because it is very, very good. That's the best bite on the whole butt is that fat cap because it's almost like a bacony kind of deal right there. It's like kind of where the skin came up over and it's really a thin layer, you know, that bacon layer is right there. But my goodness, is it good when it blossoms out like that and it's got all that smoke and it's the right thickness where the salt pulls in and stuff if you let it sit on the counter. Yeah, fat cap on all day long.
I'm with you.
Yeah. Now, a lot of the hot and fat guys, though, because I'm doing low and slow, that was 9-hour cook, I think, is what that pork butt cook was. A lot of the hot and fast guys, they got a good cook fast, so they can't afford to have all that extra fat on there. They got to render out fast, so they're going to trim all that fat off. They're going to get rid of that bacony awesomeness. They're going to put it in a bag and make sausage out of it later.
That's right. Still,
you know, they're going to trim it off. What about you?
So I've done the same. I like to leave the fat cap on, but if I'm going to take trim and collect trim for another day, I'll take a very, it's almost like getting back to making that aerodynamic brisket. Any of the little pieces that are hanging off, they're going to burn up. Anything that I want to be nice and smooth coming over the top, I'll take my knife and I'll carve a little bit off and thin it down. But I don't want any of that fat to go to waste. I use it as a self-basting mechanism. Mm-hmm. That the grease is always dripping down. And I know that eventually, you know, there's only so much you're going to get out of it. Goes back again to the wrap, to keeping the moisture in, to be able to use that Texas crutch, we'll call it that.
Yeah.
When I did competitions, it was always about loading it up with flavor, no matter which cut of pork, beef, or chicken we were using. But as a backyard enthusiast and looking at the perspective of even in the catering and restaurant industry, I want people to be able to enjoy every bit of it. So that little bit of fat that's there is great for that initial bite. But you mm-hmm. tend to get those that are, you know, with such a mixed audience that you try to meet them in between. You have enough fat that you have that tastiness, you have that bark, but not so much that someone comes along, takes a bite into it, and they go, why am I eating like a cheek full of fat? So there has to be that happy medium.
I agree with that. Yeah, for sure. Which, you know, that brought up something else a second ago. I was thinking we ought to talk about is wrapping in the cooking method part of this. So with big, heavy cuts, you know, you want to cook for a while and let that render happen mm-hmm. so that you're starting to break down that intramuscular fat and all that stuff and start to get that render happening. Now, what I like to do these days, and I didn't do it on that video, but because I didn't think about it, but if you put pans on the lower rack on the smoke slinger, you can capture 100% of that fat and all that juice that's rendering. Big secret on these direct heat cookers. You can put that thing, if you're putting like a couple, three or four pork butts on or two briskets, put a full size buffet pan underneath on that second rack, and you're cooking in offset mode. So you're going to get some smoky fat at that point, like smoked tallow. Now we're collecting all of that. So whenever it's time to wrap, now we can separate that out. You could either take the au jus part, which sits at the bottom, or the fat that sits on the top. If you let it sit on the counter for a little bit, you can kind of spoon that fat off, whichever way you like it. But you can save some of that fat and then put it in your wrap along with whatever else. Like, I like to squirt some Tennessee Red in there is what I like to do with Blues Hog. Some guys do maple syrup and Tennessee Red mixture. For some reason, I never did understand, but they do that. So works in competition, I guess, but it's raised pinky syrup. It's not like Mrs. Butterworth. It's like glass bottle syrup. Oh.
Have you ever tried this stuff? Mike's Hot Honey. You ever try that with pork?
I've had it. Yeah. I'll be honest. I don't like, there's an aftertaste mm-hmm. that honey has that I don't like. And I think it's a production honey. Parentheses. I have a very good buddy that is a beekeeper that makes hot honey. It's called The Blessed Bee Company. If you go on the Instagrams or Facebook, you can see The Blessed Bee Company. He's in Waterloo, Illinois, and he's going to raise bees on my prairie out here this year. I think I don't remember. He said it was a bunch of bees. Like, I don't know how many bees is going to be, but kind of, I'm going to have to ask my neighbor for permission kind of deal. A lot of bees, because there's this tall grass prairie out here. And what he does, I've known Kurt long time. He's local here. And he's been working on this strain of pepper for like 10 years. And he has got this thing down. He's got his genetics right. And he has one company that makes the seedlings and another company that actually raises the plants for him to put in this honey. And you will not get that. You will not get that aftertaste. It's got this. Did you have some down there? I brought it down.
I did. I went with on a piece of bread, something that was like super hot. It was mucho culo caliente hot. It burnt on the way in and had a nice burn on the way out. That's how I know it was effective.
So in Kurt's defense, he's been working on that quite a lot. And that's old honey that I had. I like the super hot stuff, but however, he has worked on his recipe, and the one that he's launching with commercially is actually kid safe, but it's still hot, and you get those earthy tones from those peppers, dude, on ribs. I'm just saying, man, the heat kind of, it seems like on a sweet rib, when you put that honey on there and you cook it, that heat kind of dissipates. It kind of tones down a little bit. It's when you just put a rib in the honey and take a bite, that's when it burns you. But if you cook with it, it's like the heat, the temperature of the cooker, the sweet from the rib, the fat, all that stuff, everything just kind of like does its magic, and it tones down, and it gets really, really good. I love honey on ribs.
I'm still thinking about beekeeper Frank walking out in front of his house.
Not it.
This is no cartoon with like Jerry Seinfeld voicing a bee. You know, with Renee Zellweger. I'm thinking Frank's going outside with his family, and you guys are just swatting everywhere. It's
the honeybees are cool. Boy,
where you guys are running out of the car. There's bees, killer bees.
No, honeybees are very docile if you just leave them alone. They're down at the end of the driveway anyway, down in the cul-de-sac there. I live in the very end of the cul-de-sac on this county road, so nobody ever comes down here. But they like sun. The bees do. Kurt can get all down in there, and he doesn't even hardly ever mask up or nothing. You know, they're pretty tame. You know, he's good at it. He even names them, I think.
But if you get, you know, when you get stung that many times, you know, you get used to the way it goes.
Yeah. Hey, I'm really looking forward to getting me a piece of that honeycomb and big old mason jar. Oh, wow. Some of that legit stuff, man.
Oh, yes.
I'm excited about that. We make biscuits around here. We put that honey on there. Son.
We had biscuits. It wasn't bread.
We were
doing a biscuit test, and we had all these biscuits left over. So we would dip them in the hot honey. You're right.
Yeah. So little teaser here on the Smoke Slinger YouTube channel, getting ready to film a video I haven't done yet on the Liberty 94. And I'm going to go ahead and do it on the full-size Smoke Slinger too, but I'm going to do a bread test. Frozen bread, like the frozen bread you get in a grocery store. Instead of biscuits, I'm going to do bread. Just because. You heard it here first. Because it's like the size of a pork butt, kind of, maybe not really that big. So I just did a practice cook a little bit ago in the oven to make sure I got my act together. And I'm going to have me a slice of that with some honey here in a minute. Now that you got me all worked up.
Delicious.
Oh, man. Anyway, we've been at this an hour and a half, bud. This is the longest show yet. We got a lot to say about pork.
And this show is going to be available, just to make sure I got this right. We're on YouTube. We're on Facebook. We're on YouTube Music. We're on Spotify. We're on iTunes. What am I missing?
There's like 13 others that I never heard of on there that is distributed. Basically, if you listen to podcasts, you can get it on your thing. Just type in the Barbecue Nerds podcast, and it's there. There will also be blogs used out of this content as well. So for those guys that like to read. Anyway, a couple things I'd like you guys to try to check out for me. Number one, my buddy Todd Johns and Andy Groneman, they are real OGs in barbecue from Kansas City back in the day before KCBS was even in its ever thought of. There was the Hody Does and Plowboys, and those guys hold down a radio show every week that's syndicated across the country called the Barbecue Radio Network. Talk to your local radio station. If they don't carry it, let them know about it. We'd like to get on their show, and then you can catch the episodes on the podcast the next week after it airs. It's on the Westwood One radio network, so it's a real, actual barbecue radio show. Make sure you guys tune in on that. You think that we're dumping some knowledge. Those guys know way more than I do. They've been doing it a lot longer than I have. Most of the things I'm regurgitating here, I learned from those guys. So make sure you check it out. All right, guys. Hey, if you would like more information about Smoke Slinger Pits, that's our sponsor here on the show because Dave and I said so, go to smokeslinger.com. And also you can watch this YouTube channel at Real Meat Stick or Smoke Slinger Pits. Well, hey, buddy, thanks for joining me here on the show. And thanks to everybody that followed along and listened to us banter on about pork. Hopefully you found value. Next week, we'll be here. Same bat time, same bat channel, 7 o'clock Central Time. Make sure to tune in on the podcast. If you missed part of the show, we'll have it published. So there you go. Anything you want to say, Dave?
I'm going to say you couldn't have said it any better. Now go fire up those smokers.
That's right. Something. Time to get it done. If you start right now, you can get a brisket done by tomorrow morning.
Delicious.
Let's roll. See, you have a great one.
8 p.m. Eastern Time, 7 p.m. Central Time. The Barbecue Nerds Podcast out.